the same reason people pushed back against Copernicus and later Galileo. If we are not physically at the center of the universe, then we must not be important. People that look back at scripture saying, well, scripture supports the, you know, geocentric model. And both the way it describes the motions of the bodies in the heavens, but also that you know, our place in the universe is at the middle. Therefore, the Earth must be at the middle. Therefore, you know, it's taking a literal reading of scripture. It's taking a view of our part, our place in creation, and saying if we're important, therefore, that must mean we're physically at the center of the universe.
3, 2, 1. Welcome to Not a Machine.
Welcome to another Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I am Seth Payne, and I'm here with my very extremely nerdy co-nerd Cesar. And we are continuing our series on physics. But before we get into today's episode, I want to remind you, if you go to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list, get updates on what's going on around here. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get cool mugs, t-shirts. I'm wearing my Settlers of Catan-inspired shirt today. Have you ever played Settlers of Catan before?
I have to learn that.
Okay, well, we'll have to have your family over to play it sometime. My girls love it. They has to play it all the time. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can help support us financially, and any gift you can give would be greatly appreciated. And it will show us another way that what we're doing here is important. So we appreciate any support you can give. All right, so Cesar, where are we going today?
Today, we are going to Nicolaus Copernicus.
All right.
The first ones who is very famous to establish the heliocentric theory. So if we remember last time, we talked about Roger Bacon, a very unknown Franciscan friar, but give very much steps towards the ideas of modern physics. So Nicolaus Copernicus is going to defy another great conception, which is that the Earth is the center and everything moves around. But before, let's talk about his life. So we were saying that Roger Bacon was in the 12th century. Nicolaus Copernicus started his life in Polish. He was Polish. He was born in Poland in 1473, and he was an astronomer and a mathematician. And his contribution is widely recognized in history. Of course, his main contribution is the heliocentric theory. And that the sun and not the earth was at the center of the universe. He was born in Poland in a place called Torun. Forgive me, people who live in Poland. I try my best.
We all do. Yeah.
But at that time, Poland was part of the Prussian Empire. So it was Polish, part of Germany, and other part that I don't remember right now. But it was an empire, his father, Nicolaus, was a merchant, and his mother came from a family of nobility, So he has some, let's say, some means to survive and to live well, He received education in his hometown, but later he went to the University of Krakow, And there he learned medicine. Would you know that?
Wow.
So he learned medicine and he earned his master's degree in philosophy and in medicine. So you start to see he goes from one area of the knowledge, and then later he will be known for another area of knowledge.
Yeah.
Then he also studied on University of Bologna. Let's remember, University of Bologna is the first European university. You know, it's in Italy. It's the first European university that is known in the Western world. No, and he studied there astronomy. No, is in that place he became familiar with the work of Claudius Ptolemy. You remember that Claudius Ptolemy was the first one few centuries after Christ that said that the earth was the center, but was the first one to have data to support the movement.
Yeah, he was the one that we talked about that mapped out all of the retrograde movements of all the planets.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So and came up with a very complex model of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in University of Bologna, he acquired that knowledge and was very well known of Ptolemy's theory, no?
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing that we have to say about Copernicus is he never married, no? Although in his biography, it's said that he has many proposals. He was never married. He never had child. So he was a dedicated person to his investigations, and also he was a very devout Catholic. No, he always tried to explain somehow that the heliocentric theory with some, you know, parallels from verses of the Bible. No? He always tried to say that his theory, it was in communion with the Bible and not contradicting it.
Mm-hmm. No?
So that's what that is basically his life. He later was working in a very important place for the Prussian Empire, and then after that, after serving as a government official, no? He was a government official. And also, he was Chancellor of Royal Prussia. Uh-huh. So, with all those means,
quite the Renaissance man.
Yes, 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 no. We have to say that, you know, it's a perfect combination. He loved science. He was fortunate enough to have a good family, to be very well educated, and later to be in a good position so he can continue pursuing his studies, you know? And after that, he died in Austria, it's part of Prussia, no? He died in May 5, 1543, at the age of 80, no?
Wow.
And he was surrounded by his friends and family. So, let's say he has a nice death because he was surrounded by friends and family on that.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
But it is very noticeable that during his life, after pursuing after studying medicine, he wants to study astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
No? And let's see what he encountered after that.
Mm-hmm.
No? One of the things that we must say about Ptolemy is that with all his discoveries and his legacy, he starts to pave the way to what is called modern science.
Mm-hmm.
No? So we from 1400 to 1500 we are talking about the Renaissance, basically.
Yeah. No? Yeah. And the Enlightenment.
Exactly.
Paving the way for the Reformation. You know, this period of time is so interesting. And I remember in college, I thought about doing a paper on the interdependence on everything that happened in that period, you know, the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, you know, the Reformation, the Scientific Revolution. This all happened at the same time, you know, and all the things that happened, you know, the printing press was invented.
Yeah.
So many things happened at this time that it really was an explosion of different thoughts.
Yes.
And kind of a different thoughts kind of feeding off each other and having impact on each other.
And also in this time, we have to remember that there was a so it's the time of Michelangelo.
Mm-hmm.
If this is the time of, you know, the great sculptor, the great cathedrals, mm-hmm. no, the man was using their knowledge also in art to, you know, mm-hmm. to build beautiful things.
Yeah, the development, you know, I've had, you know, conversations with my wife about this, about the development in art at that time. That you were, mm-hmm. it was the development of the perspective, mm-hmm. using perspective in painting, moving from a flat image.
Mm-hmm.
That was very common in, I mean, it's the way that ancient art was done,
mm-hmm.
to let's build perspective. Mm-hmm. into our artwork, make it look like it's real, mm-hmm. try and make it as realistic as possible. And it's also, you know, thinking about, you know, Michelangelo designed amazing contraptions. Many of them he couldn't actually make work.
Mm-hmm.
But you think about, you know, what he designed, you think about, you know, Copernicus. You have this period of people kind of stretching what we thought we could do as humanity.
Yes. And also stretching towards God at this
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
We still there were some conversation about, we still kind of at the end of the medieval age, mm-hmm. where God was still the center for, yeah. and you know, the kingdom of heaven was something that everybody would like to aspire,
yeah.
you know? So there was still this theocentric, let's say, style of life, mm-hmm. from most people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Copernicus was no different, because yeah. he tried to reconcile his new heliocentric model with the Bible, you know? One of the things that Copernicus' characteristic helped also, I think, develop his science was his introspection. No, he spent a lot of time reflecting about the nature of the universe,
mm-hmm.
no? and what is the role of the human being in the universe. No?
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of reflection and inner thoughts to in his personality. No, the second characteristic is curiosity. No. He loved learning, you know, and you have to tell this guy was very curious to start, you know, studying medicine, studying math, and then studying astronomy. No, somebody will say, how are those things related? But, mm-hmm. you know, his curiosity, and I was there to say, pursuit of to know the truth,
mm-hmm.
was in him.
Yeah.
You can
yeah.
see that, no?
Yeah.
And then also humility, no? Copernicus was humble and modest, often displaying his own achievement and recognizing the achievement of the other, no? That's really important, no?
Mm-hmm.
He never said, well, these calculations obtained by me. So what he learned from Ptolemy, he gave it to Ptolemy,
mm-hmm.
no? And what he learned from others, he also gave it to others.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's really important. So
you could say he and Ptolemy and others were the roots of the open source movement.
That's a nice way to put it. Yes,
yeah.
yes. I would like to say that if we are fair in science, you know, every contribution should be open, really.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know what? Thinking back, this book that I read in college, and I'm blanking on the author's name, but he was one of the founders of the open source movement.
Mm-hmm.
The book is called The Cathedral and the Bazaar.
Oh, really?
And so his model of the open source movement was based on the medieval world,
mm-hmm.
and so pitting the cathedral of, you know, some people that might want to hide knowledge versus the bazaar out in the open where people were sharing and sharing ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. So he wrote a book, no? So let's talk about his mm-hmm. work right now. He wrote a book that is called On the Revolutions, no? And was published before his death. This book was published. It contained the mathematical and the astronomical data from the basis of his solar system, mm-hmm. of his model.
So not political revolution.
No, not a political. It's a revolution of the celestial bodies, I would say, no? Yeah. In this model, he proposed that the Earth has three movements, no? The rotational one, the translation around the sun, and then a third movement that he calculated related to precession, what it was 25,000 year long cycle, changing the position of the Earth in the space. No, so that third movement was really a long one.
Is that the wobble of the orbit of the Earth around the sun? That as the Earth orbits around the sun,
yeah,
the orbit moves.
Yes. The thing that I couldn't find is how he calculated this last mm-hmm. one. No. Mm-hmm. It is said, because that's in his work, no? But it didn't say what exactly made his calculations think about this 25,000-year-old move of the Earth, no?
And that is why teachers today, math teachers always say, show your work.
Yeah. Well, we have to give him credit, we have to think that this publication was near his death. Probably that was some of his writings that we couldn't find.
Well, yeah. It's really interesting looking at his, you know, how you're saying he looked back, he got a lot from Ptolemy. And, you know, what did Ptolemy do? Ptolemy took a lot of data mm-hmm. that had been collected before him and was able to see it all together. So Copernicus doing the same thing, taking so much data that had been collected before him mm-hmm. and being able to put it together and figure out, based on all that data, the model of the heliocentric.
Yeah. And he became with this heliocentric model because he saw the imperfection of Ptolemy's model about the precession. Mm-hmm. No, I said, if that makes sense, and it would be an easier model if the mm-hmm. sun is the center.
Yeah,
so that way we don't have to deal with the precession mm-hmm. of the apparent movement that Ptolemy put in his model. No,
it shows a desire to create Occam's razor, right? The simplest answer is the right one.
Usually, yes. Know?
So
yes.
What makes more sense, you know, that the Earth and other planets go around the sun, or that planets are able to make these tiny little loops?
Yes.
As they go around the Earth.
Yeah. And that is something really nice, because he dared to say this with defying somehow the established knowledge. Mm-hmm. Remember, the geocentric model was not exclusive of the Western world. Mm-hmm. Was not exclusive of the Catholic Church.
Yeah,
it was the belief in all the known world.
Yeah,
no, Christians, Arabics, the Islam world, mm-hmm. the Eastern world, all of them believe in the geocentric model. Mm-hmm. No. It was defying actually the worldview
of everyone.
Of everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So there are some things that he stated, seven things that he stated, no? The first one is that there is no one center in the universe, no? Mm-hmm. The Earth center is not the center of the universe, ergo, because there's no mm-hmm. one center, no? The center of the universe is near the sun, that's what he said. Mm-hmm. And the distance from the sun to the Earth is imperceptible compared to the distance from the Earth to the stars. Mm-hmm. No, he has that notion that the sun and the Earth were so near than the Earth from the star. And mm-hmm. that's true.
Yeah.
Also, we know that that's true. No?
Yeah.
The rotation of the Earth accounts for the apparent daily rotation of the stars, mm-hmm. no? Which obviously we know it right now,
mm-hmm.
a revolutionary idea at that time.
Yeah.
No? The apparent annual cycle of the movement of the sun is caused by the Earth revolving around it.
Mm-hmm. No?
And the apparent retrograde motion of the planets is caused by the motion of the Earth from which one observes, no?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not retrograde, but it is this Earth moving around the sun,
yeah.
and the planets also around the sun.
Yeah. It's so interesting thinking about this, everything that he discovered and that he kind of brought into the public's mind. This new model of the universe, I mean, thinking about why people didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't at the center anymore.
Yeah.
And at some point I wanna dive into, you know, look into the you know, we've talked about it a few times, the, you know, people that talk about now the Earth being flat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a big part of that is the same reason people pushed back against Copernicus and later Galileo, that, well, if we are not physically at the center of the universe,
mm-hmm.
then we must not be important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that look back at scripture saying, well, scripture supports the, you know, geocentric model.
Mm-hmm.
And both the way it describes the motions of the bodies in the heavens, but also that you know, our place in the universe is at the middle. Therefore, the Earth must be at the middle. Therefore, you know, it's taking a literal reading of Scripture,
mm-hmm.
but it's also I don't know. It feels like a very I don't want to say immature, but it's taking a view of our part, our place in creation,
mm-hmm.
and saying if we're important, therefore that must mean we're physically at the center of the universe.
Yeah,
and I think it's so interesting that he not only came up with this heliocentric model of the universe, and saying things like, you know, there is not one center of the universe. But he also, like you're saying, his introspection, he said, I don't think that this conflicts with my faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think that we as humanity are very important,
yep.
in creation. And spending time looking at everything he had discovered and saying, well, how does it fit,
yes.
with Scripture?
I love that idea that you just said, you know, we're still important because the importance of the human being is not because we are at the center of the universe, it's because we are created as the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah. a greater importance than being at the center of the universe.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I saw in an interesting video the other day. It was a guy who makes videos refuting flat earthers.
Okay.
And he was going through this flat earthers video, but he was basically saying that the reason why people talk about, or people want to believe that the Earth is flat, is because they want to feel special. And he's saying it's not because that person wants to feel individually special, they want us as people to feel special.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like this, the same idea that we've been talking about, that that for us to be special as a species,
mm-hmm.
we need to be at the center of things.
Mm-hmm.
And and you know, this flat earther was saying, well, look at, you know, all these, you know, these globers, you know, they look out and it's like, well, they're you know, trillions and trillions of stars, and there are trillions and trillions of planets around these stars, therefore they must say that we're not special. And the guy said, and it's really interesting because this guy that refutes the flat earthers, it's very clear, he says many times he's not a believer.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not special because we're the only planet. We're not special because we're the because we're in the center of the universe. We're special, as far as we know. Even as a non-believer, he can say we're special because at the moment we're the only planet that that supports life of all the ones that we've seen. But as a believer, we can go one step further and say we are special because we are made in the image of God.
Yeah.
Even if there are other planets out there that support life, even that if there is other intelligent life out there, we're still created in the image of God.
Yep. I would like to say that also one of the key things about his heliocentric model, going back to Copernicus, is that his observation, the one thing he didn't have is a telescope. So all his observation and annotations were made at naked eye. And that is the thing.
That's incredible.
That, yes. First of all, that's incredible.
Yeah.
No? But second, that is the thing that he lacked of precision to convince the rest of the world about his model. No? Galileo, for example, that we talk about Galileo in math, in our math theories, but Galileo is the one of the first one that used the telescope, but the telescope was not precise enough. We are talking about Copernicus doing his annotations from what he see at naked eye, and comparing the data from various sources, Ptolemy being one of them, and say this makes sense if we have a heliocentric model instead of just wandering, you know, planets that do precession. It's a simpler model if we build it like that. And then he started observing, doing his observations without a telescope and seeing that, wow, this fits better. But of course, if you want to convince the world, you have to have precise data, which much more precision than the one that he was taking. And unfortunately, at this time, he didn't have one. Neither have Galileo, because his telescope has hasn't have the precision enough to have the data. And for the ones that were believing that that the Catholic Church didn't support the heliocentric model, in our series in Galileo, when we talk about math, we also said that there were some, especially some Jesuits, that were supported of the heliocentric model, because of what they saw in their own telescopes. So Galileo was not the only one that has a telescope at this time. What makes Copernicus very highlight is that without having that instrument, he thought, as you said, what would fit better in a simpler model? That is part of the genius of Copernicus. That is something that without having the instrument, just his thoughts, he realized that it has to be heliocentric because it's simpler and didn't make sense.
Let's compare. We compare Copernicus and Galileo in faith. Copernicus reflected on the nature of the universe, our place in it, and in our the relationship to, in Scripture. Galileo wanted to reinterpret some of Scripture based on his scientific discoveries. So it looks like there's a humility on the part of Copernicus that there wasn't quite in Galileo. And as we said, we're talking about Galileo, that's what got Galileo in trouble with the church, was his he wanted to overstep and say, the science is the center, therefore the Bible needs to be interpreted. And
in another way.
And that's, I think that's an issue a lot of people have today. Yeah. Is, you know, what's the most important truth is the scientific truth.
Yeah.
Anything else has to be interpreted based on that.
And what is curious is that the scientific truth evolves, changes from time to time,
mm-hmm.
while the revelation from God is staying the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Our understanding of it changes.
Yeah.
And, you know,
our understanding not only changes, but I would say clarifies mm-hmm. and gets deeper in time.
Yes.
But the truth stays the same.
Yes.
In the scientific world, we have sometimes one theory that is probably debunked by mm-hmm. another theory, but it's debunked by another theory. But it changes, it evolves, mm-hmm. no?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, go back, we've talked about this before, about, you know, Father George Lemaitre.
Yeah.
When the Pope went to him and said, oh, now that you have this model of an expanding universe that's had a beginning, that it can prove mm-hmm. that God created the universe. And Father Lemaitre pushed back, not because he didn't see it as showing creation, but as he said, the science changes.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to pin any theological truth
yeah.
on any scientific discovery, because if you say to the if you say publicly that this scientific mm-hmm. discovery proves anything theologically,
mm-hmm.
if anything changes mm-hmm. in the scientific discovery, if anything changes to prove it wrong or prove it different, or any scientific proof after that, could say to people, well, then the theology is wrong mm-hmm. because what we pinned this theology to scientifically has been proven wrong
yep.
or is not quite correct.
Yep.
And so, yeah, as you said, the theological truth, the revelation from God is always the same.
Mm-hmm.
The scientific truths develop over time and mm-hmm. we discover more and more. And our understanding of the theological truths change, they deepen, they grow.
Yes. And I will say also that in the scientific truth, there's always a mix of true and non-true that develops together. For example, you remember in the early scientific, the astrology
mm-hmm.
was the belief that the movement of the planets influence the behavior of the body, so they mm-hmm. start to. But on that same nature, men start to look at the stars and mm-hmm. discover some truth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always some mix of truth and untruth yep. that battles yep. in our pursuit of knowledge of nature. Let's mm-hmm. say like that. No.
Yeah.
So. Why would we think that right now we have the whole truth without? So, like, you know, the ancient world believe also that they have the true knowledge of scientific mm-hmm. truth. No,
yeah.
Let's talk about Roger Bacon that we talked about in our last episode. He believed that magic was there, mm-hmm. and you know it was a good thing as long as we don't talk with the demons.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the beginning of. You know, the alchemy was the beginning of chemistry, no?
Mm-hmm.
But that was leading something good, but there is also something that was not true mixed with that. No?
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason in this time, we believe that the scientific truth is the only and also
exclusive
truth,
yeah. Yeah.
No? Which is, we have been proven from the dawn of the human civilization that is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Why we should believe that right now that is the case, no?
Yeah.
So we have to be always critical because science, we should not take as a system of belief. Science is a tool mm-hmm. to discover truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the very definition of science.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and as we've talked about a few times, the equipment used is an important part. And, you know, and Copernicus didn't have any equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Galileo had the telescope, but it wasn't precise enough.
Mm-hmm.
the discoveries preceded the ability to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the adoption of this took a long time.
Yep.
And it continued to develop. You know, this idea that the sun was near the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can always look back at mm-hmm. scientific discovery, you know, hundreds of years ago, and say, well, this is just clearly wrong.
Yeah.
You know? But going from the understanding, as you said, the whole Earth, everyone on Earth at that time thought, you know, that the Earth is the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the time of the Greeks, everyone thought that the Earth was just a flat plane
mm-hmm.
with the moon and the sun and the stars up above us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a development,
yes,
of this, of the understanding of the universe. And so, you know, we can't look back at Copernicus and say, well, how could you possibly think, you know, looking at, you know, he said that the distance of the Earth to the stars is imperceptible.
Mm-hmm.
It's so they're so far away. So how could you say, with them being so far away, that we're still, the sun is at the center?
Yeah.
It's a development of this understanding of the universe.
Yes, yes. I completely agree with you on that. You know, it will take also a couple of decades more to have Tycho Brahe with precision of a good telescope to have precise measurements, and Johannes Kepler to finally say, well,
mm-hmm.
the Earth revolves around the sun, and this is the measurement to support.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that will change the whole worldview of the known world at that time. No?
Mm-hmm.
But we are not there yet.
You're not there yet, no.
We are not there yet, no. But we have to say that he's the first one defying the geocentric model that has survived for centuries.
Mm-hmm. No?
As one of the most important legacy of Copernicus. And after that, even someone in the Catholic Church will start believing that probably yes,
mm-hmm.
and start looking at the
mm-hmm.
at the stars, no?
Well, as you said, there were Jesuits and others within the church,
yes,
that when they became available had mm-hmm. the telescopes, and so there were a number of people that were working on this. They were trying to support and to prove Copernicus's model.
Yes, the second one is he plant the seeds for future development.
Mm-hmm.
Galileo knows about the Copernicus model. No? Johannes Kepler, Newton,
mm-hmm.
who will give rise to the modern science, knows about this
mm-hmm.
and was inspired by this view that Copernicus has. No?
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. No? Somebody, sometimes you have some knowledge, you spread to the world, but that's in a limited way. And it's others that can develop, but are inspired by this. No?
Mm-hmm.
As you would like to say, sometimes we are a step on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, we stand on the shoulders of giants.
Thank you.
We don't. Yeah, we don't. No one starts any discovery on their own from scratch.
Yes,
we always take from what, you know, people have come before us.
Yes, and that's a beautiful thing because. As we pass through life, we have to also think, what legacy are we trying to give
mm-hmm.
to our family, to our community, and to the world?
Yeah.
You know? What is important, no?
Yeah.
Each one of these scientific people give, you know, a little grain of salt to build that building of what mm-hmm. that we have right now, yeah. No?
Like even you know, thinking about why we're doing these videos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to look at the intersection of science and faith, and we want to pass it on
mm-hmm.
to our children, to, you know, to the next generation. And I mean, personally, I have seen so many people on on both sides of the theology science debate, looking at, well, you know, theology is what's important, and therefore, you know, science really isn't that important. Or, you know, the science is every truth that's important is a scientific truth. You know, theology and philosophy, that's just, you know, people that like to think on the side about unimportant things. But anything that's true, what's important is the pursuit of the truth. And so this is, you know, I think this is the legacy that we want to pass on. Is that, you know, to show that you can grow in your understanding of God and us as his creation, and also say, well, let's look at look at the science that we've learned, the scientific truths. Copernicus is a great example of that. You know, that he spent his whole life growing and in this desire to understand the world better through scientific truth. But at the same time, how do I bring that back, and how do I relate that to my faith?
Yes, and that is really important, because right now, nowadays, we can still do the same. We can still, like Copernicus, pursue through, look at the nature, because, you know, as believers, we create that, we believe that nature was created by God, no? But even if you are not a believer, the one belief, the one act of faith that every non-believer does when they do science is that this would make sense. And there's order behind of this. And I want to discover that order. Even if you are a non-believer, you have to have that faith in order to start science.
Right? You can't do science if you didn't believe that there was order in the universe.
Exactly. And that the pursuit of that knowledge in that order is what made it beautiful and attractive.
Who is it when we in our math series that said that the language of God is math? Do you remember?
You got me.
but that idea that math is the order. You know, all science is there's math involved, because, you know, math is that transcendental, you know, this ethereal thing. You can't touch math.
Yes.
And yet math puts order to everything in the universe. And so this idea that that there is an order, that it all makes sense, and as believers, we say that, well, yes, because God created everything orderly. God created it, and God gave us, not only did God create everything orderly, but God gave us, put into us the curiosity to want to understand it.
Yes. That same curiosity, you know, that put in man, so they can pursue through, and by knowledge, at least they can know that there's an order, ergo, somebody have to put that in order. Or order doesn't sprouse spontaneously from something. No? I would like to say some final words about Copernicus. I think his introspection, his curiosity, and his humbleness is three things that make him accomplish what he accomplished. No? And he didn't, I think he didn't, or at least in the biography, it doesn't say that he wants the recognition for that. He just wants to reconcile what he knows in a simpler model and reconcile that with his faith. And I think that's a beautiful lesson that we can still learn and follow today.
The curiosity, going out beyond yourself, but then the humility to say it's not about everything. It's not about me. Mm-hmm. It's about the truth, which was also, I'm sure, part of how he then was able to take that knowledge and put it out into the world, mm-hmm. so that others could then take it. You know, I wouldn't feel off saying that he took his discoveries and said, you know, I can't prove this right now, mm-hmm. but someday someone's going to be able to.
Yeah.
And so I want to share this so that when the time comes that this can be provable, mm-hmm. they'll have all my information, mm-hmm. and then the world will know that this is true.
Yeah.
And he didn't feel like it's my place, because he knew he couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. It's not my place to prove it. It's my place. It was his place to put the model out there and say, this is what I've observed. I can't prove it to you that it's right, mm-hmm. but someday someone will be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we are all called to do our little part on, mm-hmm. that one.
Yep. None of us are going to discover 100% of the truth.
Yep.
We all do our part, and yeah. we pass on what we have to the next generation and hope that they can take it and run with it and do better and discover more truth.
I like how we are ending this one.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Every one of these episodes is, I find enlightenment. I find, you know, it's so interesting looking at where we come from. You know, as Cesar reminded us, we stand on the shoulder of giants, and we have so much of a legacy to be thankful for, mm-hmm. in the scientific discovery that came before us, and the legacy of people like Copernicus that discovered so many things about the universe, but also worked hard to reconcile it to his faith and to say that there is no contradiction between these two things. Mm-hmm. So we hope that you enjoyed this conversation. I hope you come back next time. And I want to remind you, if you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list to get updates on what's going on around here. If you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get mugs, you can get t-shirts and other cool nerdy things. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can help support us financially. Anything you can do to support us is greatly appreciated. If you have any questions, you know, or any thoughts on today's discussion, leave them down in the comments below. We read every single comment, and we try our best to respond to all of them. And we encourage you to subscribe to this channel, you know, share these videos, like, and just help get this conversation out in the world. We want to be, we're not just, you know, spouting truth just so that we can be talkers, but we want to be a part of a greater conversation. So leave your thoughts in the comments below, and we look forward to seeing you next time. All right, God bless.
Bless. Bye-bye.
System shut down.